From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Out of the office this afternoon, coming up, a very, very special interview with Chris Vellillo. He's a musician and an historian that plays a really big role in Illinois country. That's a documentary produced by Illinois Public Media and WILL-TV. You may have watched it already, but if not, you can find out all the details and where it will be airing at IllinoisCountry.org. That's IllinoisCountry.org. Up next, my interview with Chris Vellillo.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Hey, you know, the good folks right here at Illinois Public Media, WILL Channel 12, have created a brand new documentary called Illinois Country. It's about the role Illinois musicians have played in the development of country music. It's airing on Channel 12, WILL, and many other public television stations across the state. If it's not aired on yours yet and you want them to air it, just give them a call and ask them to contact WILL, Illinois Public Media, in Urbana-Champaign, to see if they can get that on the air on your local public television stations. It is a really good documentary. In fact, I happen to be a Passport member. I'm a member of WILL. That's not a surprise, frankly, I suppose. And I watched it last night. That would have been Thursday evening, the 5th day of March. It didn't air on the television station, but I watched it over the internet, because I'm a cord cutter at home. You could, too, if you're a Passport member. One of the people that is highlighted in this story, and actually kind of tells the story, is historian and musician Chris Vellillo. He's from Macomb, Illinois. Hey, Chris, it's really great to talk to you again. It's been a long time, man.
Yes, it has, and it's so nice to hear from you as well. Seems to be the last time we worked together was the Illinois State Fair a number of years back. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I was working the Illinois State Fair. We did the Closing Market Report live on stage and live to air both. And I needed some traveling music. People know that I use music to transition from one segment to the other. And you were there with the folks from RFD and Farm Bureau and managed to sit in with me and, just gave me a little music for the background and to get from one place to the other. It was fantastic. I actually, that was one of my favorite times, Chris, because I felt like I was really putting on a show, right? I do it every day, but when somebody's there live with you, it means so, so much. Country music and farm broadcasting kind of goes hand in hand and always has.
Absolutely.
Because agriculture has been in the background. In fact, you explained this up front in the documentary as it relates to WLS and the National Barn Dance, right?
Oh, absolutely. These shows revolutionized life in rural Illinois. You could be in a farm outside of Champaign in the middle of nowhere and all of a sudden hear people playing live music in Chicago, and it's music that you relate to, and you see everything start to evolve and change once that sound begins to be broadcast.
Yeah, so tell me about the development of country music in Illinois and Chicago's role, because it was kind of the place, I guess, before Nashville became the place, and it was because of Chicago maybe that Nashville got its good start.
Well, I would certainly agree with that idea. Let's start with that point, because in its day, the WLS Barn Dance was the biggest Opry-style radio show in the nation. It was bigger than the Grand Ole Opry. It was bigger than the Louisiana Hayride. All of the biggest country stars performed on that show. They were cast members. They were guests. And it was a center for country music. You had recording facilities up there that were recording this music, broadcast places like this. And then they actually took a touring version of the Barn Dance and toured it all around the Midwest, going to rural communities and county fairs, really engaging and connecting with people all over the place.
The original singing cowboy kind of got his start there, too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Gene Autry played on there constantly. And these were the personas that they presented. You know, a lot of this sort of evolved out of the old traditional tent theaters, medicine show kind of performances that involved, you know, comedy and dancing and music and all kinds of entertainment. By the way, this is also going to split off and get involved into vaudeville in a more commercial sense. But it really gets its beginnings in rural America, and certainly in Illinois, rural Illinois. It evolves through time, but this is the music that starts out as everyday music people are playing. Dance music, you know, fiddle tunes, traditional tunes that evolve through time to become, you know, what we now consider country music. It all starts from this sort of grassroots music that people are playing as a way to entertain and sustain themselves. And then with the modern developments of mass transportation systems, railroads and steamboats, you know, these things spread more and more, eventually hard roads and highways, and certainly broadcast.
Chris Villillo is a musician and an historian that plays a pivotal role in the brand new documentary from Illinois Public Media. One of the wonderful things about this documentary, Chris, is that it shows how Chicago played such a role, and then the transition from Chicago to Nashville, which really was the National Barn Dance, one of the primary broadcasters, moved to WMS in Nashville, and the Grand Ole Opry began in that city. But let's stay in Illinois, because there's just so much rooted in this state. There, south of Peoria, in Pekin, South Pekin, in fact, Golden Voice Studios are there. I didn't know about this one.
They're a very important early recording studio. A number of major acts in country music record hits there. They really become a focal point for all kinds of music, you know, in their day. And they influence a huge range of artists and ultimately other areas.
How did you become interested enough to be a historian, I suppose, in this area? And I don't know what that term means for you.
Well, my original career was not as a musician. My original career was as an archaeologist. So I had background in anthropology and archaeology. I gave that up after about 3 years of struggling to make a living in that career. And I decided I was going to try to play music for a living. And at that point, I actually spent about 5 years on the road with a country western kind of country rock show band called Ken Carlisle and the Cadillac Cowboys. And we toured all over the Midwest and hit New York City and Key West, Florida, and, you know, in the heyday of what was country rock and then urban cowboy. And then when that broke up, I went on to playing as a soloist. But in about 1986, I was approached by the Illinois Arts Council and the Library of Congress to do a music documenting project, literally to go out like Alan Lomax had, only I was going out in rural Illinois. And my job was to locate, interview, and record the oldest living musicians, folks born in the 1880s and 90s, folks that were making music before there was radio, before there was recorded music. And I heard amazing stories about how this music played into people's lives, how it was this cultural glue that held communities together and brought people from all across Illinois, you know, to meet one another and interact. And that really turned my head more and more towards learning about the roots music and how this music played such an important role in people's lives here in Illinois.
You know, I think about it over time in my own life, and music for me doesn't play a large role in my life, but it has played a big role in my life, which is odd.
Sure.
I think of growing up in Logan County, Illinois, on the farm, mm-hmm. And having a farm which was broken open by a man that had walked across, or moved across, I'm sure he did not walk, the whole of the United States, Mr. Scully, and putting a spade in the ground, saying, yes, this is a place I want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Scullys headquartered there, And I can recall vividly, and, you know, I'm not that old. I'm in my mid-50s, right? Mm-hmm. Going to the Scully Place outside of Lincoln during the summertime. And it was park-like on this particular... It was just a park-like place. And for all of the tenant farmers, there would be their square dance.
Sure.
And they'd call a square dance. And that was part of my early life. And then, of course, Farm Aid here at the University of Illinois. I was a student.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and that was a big deal. Dennis Riggs, by the way, for those who have not watched the movie yet, who's from Champaign County, played a big role in that. He's a local farmer. And his sons, if you're familiar with the Riggs Beer Company, the brew pub here in town, or Riggs Beer, you probably find that most places, also stay up with the arts. So it just plays this interconnecting role. The Hennings is a group here from Illinois that have been out to the Farm Progress Show and been working with seed companies over the years. That was in my background. I went to more Farm Aid concerts to cover them, Chris.
Wow. Well, I'm so jealous.
Yeah, it was just fantastic. I mean, I after the fact, the first one, but after that, this just played a real role. And I can remember vividly a couple of things about Farm Aid. You know, Willie Nelson came to Danville, Illinois to announce the, I don't remember what year, either 91 or 93 Farm Aid concert that took place in Indianapolis. And I'm not awed by many people just because of my job. And so, but Willie Nelson, right? And here I am, I'm asking Willie Nelson questions. It is the only time I have interviewed somebody and also asked for his signature.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And he gave it to me. He gave it to me, actually thanked me because I asked him questions about farming as opposed to who was going to be on stage. Yeah. However, just it's incredible. And I don't think that my background is that much different than anybody else's, because music weaves into the tapestry, the fabric of our lives all the time. I know it does for you, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. It is quite literally the soundtrack of our lives. I worked for a couple of years as the Illinois Scholar when a traveling exhibit came from the Smithsonian Institution on roots music. And they had this phrase which really stuck in my mind. And roots music is all the music that evolves into modern music, blues, gospel, folk, really early country. And their thought was that roots music is the soundtrack to the melting pot of America. And this is so true. If you listen to the way country music evolves, it has deep roots in the Celtic and British Isles traditions that hits the Appalachian Mountains, but it also breeds very intensely with black music. Mother Maybelle Carter, the Carter family, learned how to play guitar from a black musician. You know, there's this crossover time and time again from different cultures and groups that come together and blend to create these new sounds. And they're a part of our lives, whether it's now on some form of broadcast media. Back in the early days when there wasn't, it was a question of people getting together and socializing through music. It could have been singing songs while you pulled weeds in the garden. I interviewed folks that talked about how music was so prevalent in their lives in the 1890s, and it was every day. If they were working chores, music distracted them. If they were done with chores, music was their entertainment. It was the way they socialized. I mean, it's just constantly around us, and it creates these almost visceral connections to place and memory that are very, very powerful.
During Illinois Country, on this note, you talk about the development of the steel guitar and how that happened.
Mm-hmm. So this is a classic example of how these musics blend together. I play a lot of bottleneck slide guitar, which is a fairly early form of slide, which will eventually evolve into things like the dobro, pedal steel guitar, et cetera. This is a style of playing that evolves from a slave instrument called the diddley stick. Which is a simple one-stringed instrument you could make out of anything, anywhere. I think on the show, they had me just create one, and I brought it in, just put it together and played on it right away. You just slid something up and down this one string, and it would change the pitch. And really, rudimentary blues could be played on this instrument, as well as a lot of very simple traditional music. By the late 1800s, it's evolved to the point where blues musicians are using this style on guitars and playing blues slide, as we more or less know it now. They work on steamboats traveling up and down the Mississippi, Ohio, Illinois, and Missouri rivers. They spread that music wherever they go because people hear them playing it, and they love this sound, and they copy it. Well, in the late 1920s, Jimmy Rogers, the godfather of country music, is beginning to record songs. And at that point in time, the number one selling records in the United States are Hawaiian slide guitar. Also, another variation that comes out of this same tradition. So he hires a Hawaiian slide guitar player to perform on one of his early recordings just to boost the sales. And from that point forward, slide guitar and country music go hand in hand. It's in the dobro, it's in the lap steel, the steel guitar that Hank Sr. used so prevalently. In the 1950s, they create the pedal steel guitar. In the 1970s, that evolves not only into country music, but then into country rock. And it just goes everywhere. Again, it all comes all the way back to a simple slave instrument, one string, but it evolves and spreads and changes as it crosses cultural lines and brings people together in ways they never would have dreamed of doing.
What is it about country music, or how did it evolve as a storytelling genre?
Well, you know, I love songs that tell stories. And this is one of the things that originally attracted me to folk music and very early country. I love the Carter Family, Jimmy Rogers, you know, that whole era of music. And, you know, I think it comes out of the British and Celtic versions of music, where there are a lot of ballads, a lot of stories. Music is used as a way to entertain and share information. As the music evolves into country music, you see this a lot with folks like Jimmy Rogers, who takes blues and countryfies it and creates country blues. You see this in the Carter Family, that take traditional folk songs and shorten them to 3 minutes, which, by the way, was the length of a record in those days. They modernize it. They add harmonies. Mother Maybelle does that fancy church lick style of picking that she learns. And it becomes almost standardized into the format of a short song that tells a story. And these stories are the stories of the people in rural America, stories of loving and working and struggling and winning and losing. And it becomes an emotional outlet that really connects deeply with people to this very day.
And out of that come musicians, for instance, from here in Champaign County, like Alison Krauss.
Oh, yes. That is one amazing woman. I had the privilege of working with Alison on my very first recording in 1986. That was recorded at U of I at the Experimental Music Studio there. And the producer kept saying, I have this young girl you need to use to play fiddle. And I had already made arrangements with another fiddle player. And I said, no, I've already promised somebody else. Well, the sessions ran long. We were a day late. My guy couldn't come in. So he brings in this young girl. And she was about 16 at the time. And I remember that I had a song I wanted her to play on. I played it for her one time. I said, I want you to play sort of a rhythmic thing on the second verse. Take the middle break, go back to the rhythmic thing, and then play us out. You want to try it one time? She said, no, roll the tape. And by God, she did it on the first pass.
Wow.
And it was spectacular.
Wow.
And then when I was listening to the demo tapes, the duplication tapes, a member, and this was in Macomb, a woman stopped me because I had gone into a high-end audio store there and we're playing it on different speakers. Turns out that she was the chair of Western Illinois University's classical music department, and she was just floored by the quality and tone of her playing. And, you know, what a wonderful example of all these elements coming together in an amazing talent.
Yeah, that is relevant in today's era.
Oh, absolutely.
Which Which is stunning, right? Which is truly stunning.
Well, music is the way we can express emotions, the way we can express frustrations, the way we can express hope. It is a very powerful form of communication. And country music, in all of its forms, is rooted in that basic one-on-one kind of a thing. We're telling the stories of everyday people. And I think that is so critically important. Those are the social elements that hold us together as a people and as a culture. And country music really encapsulates so much of that.
I want to take you back now to something from the early in the development of country music here in Illinois, as it relates to broadcast, and something that's early on in the Illinois country documentary. We talked about Gene Autry.
Yeah.
But I believe you had a discussion about a man from Tuscola, Illinois, that worked with Gene. His name was Smiley Burnett.
Yes, Smiley Burnett, yes. He was in a public radio station, Smiley was in a commercial station down in Tuscola. It was the second...
WDZ.
Yeah, the second station in the country. Before Chicago had a radio station, Tuscola did.
First station to broadcast commodity agriculture numbers, by the way.
Oh, I'll be darned. Isn't that amazing?
Yep.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Well, and Smiley Burnett was one of the musicians that played on that. And, you know, these are days back when the music on radio stations was done live. They weren't spinning records. They were bringing musical acts in. And all different kinds of local groups would have a 15-minute or a 30-minute show a couple of times a week or whatever it was. And it really was a whole different way of presenting the music. And I believe the story I heard was that Gene Autry was going to Chicago and his usual player couldn't come. Somebody told him about Smiley Burnett. And sure enough, they hooked up, and the rest, as they say, is history. Smiley went on to work with Gene, to go to Hollywood, to do movies, and become a very important force in you know, country music.
Hey, thank you for taking the time with me today to talk about Illinois Country, this documentary, and I suppose your life's work as well. I really appreciate it, and I know that this has to mean so much to so many people because of the rich history of music in the state of Illinois.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I loved Ken Burns' documentary, but it was a great idea to look at it from the Illinois perspective, because so much of what we think of as country music has very strong and very direct roots to our state, and we should be darn proud of that.
Chris Falillo plays an important role in the documentary produced by Illinois Public Media called Illinois Country. Look it up at illinoiscountry.org. That's illinoiscountry.org, and ask your local public station if they'll play it.